So first off, let's talk just a little bit, give us a little bit of introduction, you know, why we feel like we can talk about this. Because, you know, we've run into sometimes people, there's this culture of the super child, you know, that the super baby out there, the gifted kid that's going to be the next super genius. And a lot of times, neurotypical people, if you will, look at these kids and say, ooh, they're magic. And, you know, we want to say, not so much.
Hal and I both grew up in the gifted movement. In the second grade, I was in experimental school that let you go as far through the curriculum as you wanted to. And I finished the sixth grade before Christmas in the second grade and then moved to a rural school where they had no such thing and spent the next 4 years bored out of my skull. But we were in the gifted program, both of us, from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I went to the North Carolina School of Science and Mathematics, a boarding high school for gifted kids. And what we found out is that what people think gifted kids is not really what they need. And so we want to talk about what are some myths and ideas people have about gifted kids, and what is the truth, and what do gifted kids need? How can you work with the Lord in the way that He created your child to bless them and help them to navigate through life?
Okay, so let's kind of burst some bubbles here. First off, start with, you know, one of the first things that people think when you talk about a gifted kid is think, well, they're going to do well in school. I mean, they're gifted that way, right? You know, actually, the fact is they've got a lot of challenges.
Often, gifted kids get bored and they stop trying. They just don't have any interest in it. They don't try to make any effort to do their schoolwork. On the other hand, sometimes their curiosity drives them to stop paying attention to what people are teaching them, and instead they're focused on what's in their mind, and they're off on another planet.
You know, oftentimes gifted kids can be kind of socially awkward, and it's not necessarily their own fault. I mean, sometimes society doesn't know what to do with them. The other kids, you know, tease them. And so sometimes they don't work and play well with others.
And a lot of gifted kids are twice exceptional. They have learning disabilities as well as their giftedness that keeps them from performing to the level that you would expect by their intelligence.
Okay. So, like, here's an example. All right.
So this young man is profoundly gifted. And he can read 400 pages in less than an hour. Just super gifted guy. Really smart. He made C's in college. And he came back to his parents and he said, I can't focus. I fall asleep in class. I can't get anything done. And they encouraged him to go get tested by the college disability support offices. And they said they'd never tested anyone who was more ADHD than he was. That because there wasn't enough stimulation in class, his brain would shut down. His brain couldn't handle it. And he'd be passed out in the middle of class. And so he had to have accommodations so he could stand up and walk around in class, so he could use a computer in class and do things other kids couldn't, because he had to have a high level of stimulation to be able to focus.
You know, a better idea, rather than have that idea that, you know, that this gifted kid is just going to automatically do really well in school, you know, we need to recognize that there are issues and then work with those issues. Work with the individual needs of that particular child.
Another myth that's common is that being gifted means an easy life, that giftedness makes it easy. Mm-hmm. And it's not true. Often gifted people struggle with perfectionism. Mm-hmm. They have such high standards for themselves that they feel like they can never meet those standards.
Well, and some things do come easy. And oftentimes, you know, in school, there are things that get recognized and rewarded. And so
yes.
They feel like all of life should be easy. And if something is not easy, then, you know, maybe I don't want to try it because I might fail. And that will burst the bubble of my self-identity.
Especially when giftedness becomes their identity. You know, oh, I'm the smart kid. Then if they face anything where they struggle at all, they panic. And their fear keeps them from succeeding. And they have a tendency to quit rather than to keep struggling.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things we've seen with gifted kids, and I've seen this in myself sometimes, if it is easy, if the schoolwork does come easy, it's hard to develop a work ethic. It's hard to develop study skills. It's hard to develop self-discipline.
And mated with that is the unrealistic expectations they have of themselves. And so because things have been easy up to a certain point, when they hit a hard part, They have no self-discipline. They haven't had to work hard. They haven't had to struggle. And so they have an idea that I ought to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm the gifted kid. I'm the kid everybody talks about how smart they are. And they feel pressure that if they're not that prodigy, they're not that top-of-the-line kid, that they have a huge crisis.
You know, the gifted kids are the ones who will get an A- on a paper and will panic. You know, yeah. Because they feel like it all ought to be A plus. And if I don't, if I get a B, I have just failed.
This is really common. It's people, there's a lot of pressure to graduate gifted kids early. And I had a friend in school who was at that boarding school for gifted kids when we were all 16. He was 12. He graduated at 14. He was in the workplace at 15. The problem is, when you're in the workplace at 15 or you're in college years before other people, everyone looks at you and they, oh my, wow, he's amazing. He's a Mozart. He's going to be successful. And that's a lot of pressure. But then what happens when that goes away? What happens when you're 23 and nobody's excited? You're just another 23-year-old and you lose your identity. You don't know who you are anymore because you're no longer the young prodigy that is, yeah, the young prodigy that's succeeding. Now you're the kid, you're just another kid, and that can be very hard. When I went away to the boarding school for gifted kids, I will never forget the first weekend we were there because everybody compared SAT scores. At my high school that I came from, I had the highest SAT score as a 10th grader of anyone in my high school. And then I get to NCSSM, and I'm talking, so how did you do on the SAT?
Mm-hmm.
And the girl next to me made a 1600. She had a perfect score, and I was devastated. You know, that seems unreasonable from this perspective, but I had been used to being the smartest kid there. And suddenly, I went from being the big fish in a small pond to suddenly there's a bunch of big fish, and I'm not the biggest one. In fact, I'm kind of average here. And it was very hard. I went back to my room and wept because I didn't know who I was if I wasn't the smartest kid. That's who I'd always been.
Okay, so, you know, a better alternative to that, rather than saddle them with this this perfectionism, these unrealistic expectations, is to conscientiously disciple them.
To think about what they need, to think about the discipline that they're going to need, the self-control that they need, the modesty, and to help them work through it.
Okay. Now, one thing that we're very tempted to, especially as homeschoolers, is think, well, if they can do it, then we ought to push them forward. You know, we did that with one of our kids, and it was a mistake.
You know, he found everything easy, so I thought, hey, we're homeschooling. We don't have any rules here. You can go as far through the curriculum as you want to go, honey, and nobody's going to stop you, and I'm not going to move you to a rural school where no one's going to teach you this stuff. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't know mm-hmm. is that there are developmental stops.
There are things where their brain development has got to catch up before they can do certain processes. And that's not a reflection of their intelligence or their ability or their giftedness. It's just a matter of simple biology.
Okay? For example, you cannot understand, with very few exceptions, some autistic kids are an exception to this, you cannot understand abstract reasoning, the abstract reasoning needed to do algebra, for example, until the hormones have caused your brain to remodel into the adult version.
Mm-hmm.
And so until those hormones hit and the brain remodeling takes place, algebra is a closed book. Okay? And so...
So what happens if you've got this precocious math kid, okay? This kid that math it's just a language to them, and they just understand it intuitively, and they're adding and subtracting, and they're starting to deal with things like multiplication when they're 4 and 5 to 6 years old, and you're thinking, wow, I've got another Thomas Edison on my hands or something like that, and then they hit this developmental stop. You know, everything has just been easy, 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 and push, 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 and they hit this developmental stop, and they suddenly decide, okay, I can't do this. I'm not smart enough to do math.
I'm no good at math. That was our son. He raced through math, and he got to that point where you needed to have your brain remodeled to get there, and it got hard. And he said, oh, I'm no good at math. Y'all, He's a 28-year-old, super successful guy now, mm-hmm. who in college studied years of algebra, linear algebra, mm-hmm. all kinds of things, and still doesn't think he's any good at math.
He's got a degree in economics from one of the top schools in the country, and he thinks he's no good in math, okay? Because when he was a fourth grader, he hit a developmental stop, and we did not help because we thought, oh, come on, you can do this. We thought maybe he was just slipping in his commitment or something.
And so a better idea is to broaden out the curriculum mm-hmm. instead of pushing him forward, and we'll talk about more about that later.
Okay. Now, here's a real trap. Sometimes we think that because they're intellectually gifted, that they can handle all of the wonderful pipeline of information on the internet earlier than their brothers and sisters could.
That's not true, because often gifted kids will seek thrills in unhealthy ways mm-hmm. to alleviate their boredom.
Okay. Or else they may try to just anesthetize themselves with it.
Well, you know, I think about one young man. Mm-hmm. They can become obsessive about gaming, mm-hmm. obsessive about even just learning on the internet. We've got to watch in these kids for internet addiction. Mm-hmm. If you unplug them for a few days and they can't handle it, they panic, they freak out, you got a problem. You know, if you say, we're not going to take our devices, we're going camping this weekend, and they become belligerent and angry and hostile, you've got a problem. Mm-hmm. It's important to recognize that intellect does not equal maturity. Intellect does not equal maturity. Mm-hmm. That just because they're really, really smart, it doesn't mean they're mature enough to handle things. Some friends of ours had a son profoundly gifted. He went away to college on scholarship. And their first indication something was wrong is when they started getting information from the school about how to resolve his account since he had dropped out. And they're like, what? And he had gone to school far away. They made plans. They went up there. They found him sitting in an apartment, hadn't eaten in days. He looked like a drug addict, hadn't washed in days, had dropped out of school. Because he was so interested in what he was learning on the internet, he just started reading and learning all the time. To the point that he became addicted to. He was constantly reading. And he read in the bathroom, and he read in the bed at night, and he wasn't sleeping or eating. He was a drug addict. The drug was his brain. The drug was the dopamine thrill he was getting from learning new stuff. Now, that sounds kind of backwards. We think, what's wrong with learning? But the problem is he couldn't control it. He couldn't handle it. And he's still in a mess. They're still struggling to help him find a job, because he'll get a job for a while, and then he'll go back to the internet, and he'll start reading all the time and learning all the time and quit everything.
Well, and this is a tough thing, because the internet is so much of a tool that it is modern life now, you know, that it's something we do have to help our kids understand how to use it and use it responsibly. And one of the best ideas that we heard is from some technical friends of ours. They have a rule in their household that their screen time is severely limited if it's just consuming, if it's entertainment, if it's just playing around on the internet.
If it's reading or gaming or just goofing around social media, if it's noodling around on the internet, severely limited.
But then they said, but there's no limits if you're doing something productive. If you are researching a project, if you are learning a programming language, if you're doing something that has a goal in mind and this is a tool that you're using,
you're producing something.
There's no limit on productive time on the internet. Just recognizing there's a difference between, and that's something we have to deal with, you know, just even in our own homes, to say, you know what, if I'm playing games on Facebook, or if I am doing research for a term paper, the back of my laptop looks the same to anybody observing, right? There's no way to tell, okay? So you just have to help train your kids to recognize and be honest with themselves. Right now, I'm doing work. Now, I'm playing around. And there's a difference.
Another very common myth is that gifted kids are ready for adulthood sooner.
Okay.
Than other people. And actually, many gifted kids tend maybe emotionally immature or emotionally delayed.
You know, and it's kind of interesting. It's almost as if there's a balance in our lives. Sometimes if we're if the scales are weighted very strongly in one direction, that means the scales went up on the other side where they're lighter. And so oftentimes you see very intellectual, you know, very gifted kids in the brain department who have emotional issues. I mean, like, issues, okay?
Yeah, intelligence is not the same as common sense or street smarts.
Haven't we noticed that?
Yeah, we used to joke about our friend who was at boarding school with us who was 12. We were there and said, you know, oh, man, he's going to do great things. He'll probably win a Nobel Prize if they get somebody to get him up in the morning and fix him breakfast and send him to the shower. You know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we've got to recognize that maturity and intellect are not the same thing.
And, you know, some things happen with this, again, because if our kids are thinking more, if their academic work is advanced for their age, they're going to naturally gravitate more socially toward people who are older than them.
Yeah.
And that can make them subject to predators. That can make them subject to all sorts of manipulation.
If your child, your gifted child, is spending a lot of time with people older than he is or she is, you really need to work through them how to protect themselves from predation. You need to talk about some basic rules. No one gets to see you, and you don't get to see anybody else in the areas covered by your bathing suit. No one gets to touch you there or take a picture of you, and you don't look at pictures of other people. And you have to tell them, if someone tells you, don't tell your parents, that's a huge red waving flag to go tell your parents immediately. Mm-hmm. And so we have to protect them. It's not a bad thing for them to be involved. Hal, you had a great relationship with an elderly man when you were a child.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that we want to keep them away from those relationships, but we have to teach them how to be protected.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so your case study.
My friend who was at boarding school at age 12, he was not prepared to be away from home. Mm-hmm. He was not emotionally mature enough to be away from home. Mm-hmm. He couldn't manage his life. It was very hard, and it was kind of sad. He was very lonely because he didn't share anything with the rest of us.
Okay. You know, how do we deal with this? One of the things is just recognize maybe I've got a kid who has a gift in one area or another, but they're still a child. They still need parenting. They still need somebody to disciple them, to warn them, sometimes to correct them and rebuke them. That's what we do as parents, and that's what they need as children.
And that can be really hard for you to have the confidence to do when you feel like your child is smarter than you are. Mm-hmm. When you have a child who's studying calculus and you could barely get through algebra and you can feel like, what do I have to teach them? Honey, you got a lot to teach them. You know so much more about life than they do. You know so much more about the Lord than they do. You've got a lot to teach them. You need to continue to parent until they're adults.
Okay. Now, we can sometimes be drifting into thinking that our gifted child ought to be good at everything. They're so good in this one area that
you're smart enough to do this. I saw your IQ score. You're super smart. I don't know why you're having trouble with this.
You know, this is a very real thing, and we had to learn this, okay? There's such a thing as being twice exceptional. What does that mean? That means you can be super gifted in one area and super struggling in another. It just happens that way. In fact, it's not an uncommon thing.
Yeah, in fact, this tends to be missed in one of three ways. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the giftedness hides the disability for a time. Mm-hmm. That's what happened to our son who got away to college, and we didn't realize he had ADHD. We didn't realize to the degree he did. We didn't realize that he was severely dysgraphic to the degree that he was, because he was so gifted, he was able to work around things, and he was able to cope with his disabilities. It was only until once he got to college that he wasn't able to cope anymore.
Now, sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes we get so focused and so bogged down into the disability that we don't recognize the giftedness that's on the other side of that.
Yes, we can say, but he can't even spell three-letter words. And he can't, you know, and we're so focused on the struggles he's having that we're missing the incredible depth of intelligence this child has.
Okay, and then sometimes their disability and the giftedness balance each other out. They cancel one another.
You think, well, you know, this is just an average child. Really, it may be a profoundly gifted child with profound issues, and they kind of balance each other out.
Okay. So, you know, it's not an uncommon thing to see a very uneven performance. You give them a range of tasks to do, and some things they just breeze through in a snap, and other things they just throw up question marks.
And it's easy to get angry with them. It's easy to think, you can do this. Why are you making such a big deal about this? Mm-hmm. And when really it may be genuinely too difficult for them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we see this in what Diane Kraft calls Teflon learners. that there's just an area that the learning just seems to slide right off of them. You know, you put it in the pan and you cook it up and you expect it to be there, just whoosh, slides right out of the pan. It's not there anymore.
Okay. These are kids, they're clearly bright, but school is really hard. We're going to be talking about these kids at more length in another session.
We had a child whose school was an absolute train wreck. Mm. And I felt like he was bright from the time he was little, so I struggled a long time even with getting him diagnosed, because I thought, he's so smart. He's not a special needs kid. I thought I knew what special needs kids look like, but I didn't. And I thought, there's no way he has special needs. He's so bright. But he had a tremendous need. He was severely dyslexic, severely dysgraphic, severely ADHD. When we really got the glimpse is when his older teenage brothers bought a business. And they bought a business, and he went in with them, and he took it over and ran that thing. I mean, he rocked it. He was contacting customers and contacting suppliers, and I'm like, oh my goodness, he's handling this like a 35-year-old. And it really showed me there's a tremendous gifting in him, but he was struggling in every area of school.
So you know what, this, when you've got a kid like this, you really just need to listen to your instincts as a parent. Listen to your gut on this, because you can look at this child and say, this child is struggling to read. He's 2 years past where I would expect him to be, but you talk to him and he's perceptive. He understands things. If somebody will give it to him verbally, he'll never forget it. This is obviously a very intelligent young person. He's got a problem in one particular area or a range of areas. And so you have to deal with that, and then you address the problems, understanding that there's a gift that's lying behind it.
What I've learned is when something inside me says, something's not right here, to listen to it. So let's talk about, okay, we've talked about all the negative stuff, myths and the things people say about gifted kids that are not true or not necessarily true. Let's talk about what gifted kids need. How can you bless your gifted child and help them along?
Well, you feed them.
You feed them. A rich intellectual life is so important. Now, does that mean that you push them forward as quickly as possible in school? No. No, because they're going to hit those developmental stops. A better idea is, instead of pushing forward, broaden out. Okay? Make the curriculum richer across the board. History, science, art, music. Think enrichment. Think, how can I make this richer? Okay, we're studying history. We're reading a book. Why don't I get them more biographies from this time period? Mm-hmm. Why don't I introduce them to the art and music of the time period? Mm-hmm. You want to enrich it. Unit studies, real books, doing hands-on things, nature study, biographies, all that stuff, enrich it. Make it deeper and wider, not pushing forward. Now, the cool thing about this is it's going to give them a perspective that's going to really bless them when they get to higher studies. Because when they get to those higher studies, they're going to have a much broader perspective than most kids their age. And so that's what you want to do. You want to broaden out.
Now, one of the things that's really important is you need to have lots of discussion with them. Now, when you discuss things with them, you're doing two things. You're training them how to think. You know, you're asking them questions and helping them to reason through in a logical fashion. I mean, just asking them to explain things, you know, just asking probing questions. You don't have to be a genius to ask the right kind of questions. That's the first thing you're doing. You're teaching them how to think. And then by having them communicate it back, you're teaching them to communicate their thoughts. You know, I've met people who were technically brilliant. They could not communicate it. They couldn't talk to non-technical people. They needed somebody to translate for them. You know, if you've got somebody who has brilliance in math and they have the skills to communicate that to normal folks, you've got a gem, okay? So discussion is really important for those two reasons.
I read the most fascinating study just a few weeks ago. So what they did, this was an international study, and they talked to people and they asked them estimate how many books were in the home you grew up in. When you were a teenager, how many books do you think were in your home? And then they tested the literacy of those people, like a verbal test, like on the SAT, the verbal part. Mm-hmm. Now, this is fascinating. Someone with an eighth grade education who grew up in a home full of books had higher measures on the literacy test than college graduates who grew up in homes with few books. Did you hear that? Basically, having a lot of books in your home can make up for about 8 years of education. Wow! I mean, that blew my mind. And so a great thing you can do for your gifted child is to surround them with books. Buy books. The scripture says in Proverbs, with all you're getting, get wisdom. As you're out spending money and getting stuff, get things that make your family wiser. Get wisdom. And so, yeah, don't ever feel guilty about loading up those books in the home, because those give our kids things to think about.
Yeah, Charlotte Mason said, a child needs something to love and something to do and something to think about. You know, that's a good rule of thumb to say, you know, to give your children, even when they're very young, to give them a stimulating environment with things to look at, to be curious about, to handle, to do, to ask questions about. That is just feeding that mental capability. Okay?
You know, one thing that differentiates the United States, we have family in China, and it is, the life of my nephew in China is very different from my children's lives. He gets up in the morning, and they have tutoring before school, and then he goes to school. And then every day has a different activity. It might be golf, it might be tennis, it might some activity, and then there's more tutoring. And then there's homework time, and then there's bedtime, they get up and start all over again. Versus my kids have a lot more free time than that, even though they work very hard in our business and they have chores in our home. And it's interesting, but if you look at the scientific developments and entrepreneurship and innovation in the past century, the United States has far more innovation, far more entrepreneurship, far more scientific advances than any other country, and yet our kids are some of the least programmed. And that's changing. You know, people are being pushed to put their kids in sports when they're 4 years old, which is ridiculous. Y'all, I'm sorry. Putting their kids in sports when they're 4 years old, and to do all these extracurricular activities and all this extra tutoring stuff, and they think it makes their kids smarter, but it doesn't. Instead, it stifles their creativity. It stifles the exploration that they need to do of the world. It stifles their ability to think outside the box. Because in order to think outside the box, you need time to imagine and time to pretend and time to live in your mind and to think up big questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you need to be honest about your child's learning challenges. You know, oftentimes they do have some. And all right, let's talk a little bit about testing on this.
I really hesitated to do testing with our son when I realized we had a big issue going on, because I had always heard, oh, don't let your child get labeled. You've got to realize that if you're homeschooling, you are in a different paradigm. There are some downsides to getting labeled in the schools. Mm-hmm. You know, they control what happens to your child and where they go and what resources they get.
Well, they can get tracked into different things, and there's social impact.
There's social impact.
Okay.
Now, but a label is important when that label is a diagnosis that allows you to help them. Mm-hmm. You know, if I have pneumonia, I need to be, I'm threatening hell to go to the doctor with all this coughing. If I have pneumonia, I need a diagnosis so that I can get the right medicine.
That's correct.
Okay. And in the same way, getting that diagnosis can help you to know how to address your child's problems, and you don't have to tell anybody else. You can keep that knowledge to yourself. They don't have to be labeled as far as the world goes unless they need it. And we're going to be talking about that during Certain Learners in High School and College later this afternoon. We're going to talk about when a label is useful and will help them.
Okay. You know, recognizing that there are profoundly gifted people who have some incredible challenges to overcome. And oftentimes, the challenges can mask the giftedness because we focus on what they're not able to do and not instead saying, okay, you are prepared to do something really great in this area. We need to get you some help over here so that you can accomplish what you're made for.
One of my favorite examples is Agatha Christie, the mystery novelist. She's one of the most widely read best-selling authors in the past century. She was so dyslexic she couldn't spell for toffee. Mm-hmm. And so her editor had to edit with her on the phone to tell them what the words were. They couldn't even recognize what the words were. They weren't just misspelled, they were unrecognizable. And yet, she was one of the most prolific authors we have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I don't recall what General Patton's issue was. He was dyslexic, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was dyslexic and dysgraphic. He graduated at the bottom of his class at West Point, the very last one. Mm-hmm. And yet, no one else's name from his class is remembered.
You know, one of the things that we found with our gifted and twice exceptional kids is brain integration issues. What do you mean by that? You know, you hear about the left brain, right brain model, you know, the idea that your left brain is where your symbology is and your right brain is where the artistic, interpretive type of gifts are. Well, when you read, you're looking at the symbols on the page, and that's your left brain, but then it has to communicate to the right brain to say, well, what does that sound like? And what does that word describe? And so you're crossing back and forth across the midline of your brain, and some kids have trouble bridging between the two halves. That's a brain integration issue.
And so frequently, learning disabilities and ADHD are connected to our kids' inability to switch sides of the brain, and or their struggles with switching sides of the brain. And this impacts, it can impact writing, it can impact reading, it can impact focus and attention. And the thing to remember is, though, that the strength, a lot of them are strongly right-brained, they're very creative. Many artists and sculptors and entrepreneurs are dyslexic or dysgraphic. They have a strong ability in the right brain, but we've got to help them learn to switch, to cross over the midline so they can do what they have to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, one of the things you got to work with these kids is they can get bogged down themselves. They can think, well, I'm just not smart. I'm just not able to do this. I'm just not academically wired properly. And no, I mean, they are, you know, these twice exceptional kids are academically able, but there's an area that they need help with. And the thing is, if they don't believe that there's help available, if they don't believe that anything they do is going to have an impact on it, they're not going to try. They're not going to do what they need to make it stick.
We have to give them hope. We have to give them hope that they can be successful. We have to feed their strengths. In the schools, the focus is very much on let's shore up their weaknesses. But at home, we have the ability to also feed their strengths. And so we have a tendency to, okay, well, you're good enough at that, I'm not going to worry about that. But if they're great at an area, if they're great at business or athletics or reading or whatever area that they're successful in, encourage them in it. Give them more tools. Give them more help in that area so that they have an area that they can feel great about, that they're successful in, which will give them the strength and confidence to work on the weaknesses.
And we've got to give them a hope for the future. We need to help them recognize that, okay, maybe your pathway from here to your future isn't going to look like your brothers and sisters. That's okay. You're not your brother and sister. God made you a particular way, and if you're taking a different road, fine. We'll find it, and we'll lead you through it. Okay, so you got to give them the hope for the future so that they don't give up when they're 9, 10, 11, 12 years old.
So we told you about our son who was, all of school was a train wreck, but he was successful at business. We helped him. We got him diagnosed. We helped him with some interventions and some brain therapy exercises, and he grew, and he improved, and he strengthened. And he's at college now. A child that I didn't know if he would ever be able to live independently, because at 14 he couldn't spell three-letter words. And he's at college, he's on the dean's list. And his business is still a thing. He's at a college that has a venture lab that they give kids $1,000 if they come up with a project, a business idea that they can sell to the board. And they $1,000 to go research it. And then if they come back with a viable business plan, they give him $5,000. And he's been fully funded in two business ideas, and he's launching two businesses while he's at college. And so you've got to tell your kids these stories if you've got a twice exceptional kid and help them to know that they can be successful.
Mm-hmm. Now, recognize that intellectually gifted kids often are socially inept. In fact, Kids are often socially inept, but we're going to deal with the special kids here. So we need to recognize that the social intelligence often is not keeping up with their book intelligence.
And this is not always true. You'll have some kids that are just, our Sam, the business guy, is super social and very socially adept. Mm-hmm. You know, some of his brothers struggle more with it. But the child who struggles, sometimes gifted kids will brag or seem proud, or they'll perform because they feel insecure. And that's a way that they can get positive attention.
Well, and that's also, you know, that becomes part of their self-identity. Hey,
yes.
I'm the smart kid. I know better. I know more than everybody else. And so I'm going to flaunt it because if anybody else asks, if they ask me to throw a baseball, I am totally useless. If they ask me to dance, I can't. I've got two left feet, and so I'm going to show off the thing that I can show off and then just hope they can deal with it.
And a lot of them are more comfortable with older people because they can talk to the older people equal to equal, basically. Mm-hmm. And the older people don't care what shoes they have on, mm-hmm, or if they've watched the latest concert.
Okay, so here's the socialization question for us. How can we teach our kids to get along with their peers when they're different?
Walk through social situations with them. Before they go into a social situation, talk about it. Talk about what's going to happen, what's expected, some things that might come up, and then role play it with them. So how are you going to react if someone says this? Well, why don't you pretend to be the person saying that, and I'll pretend to be you. Okay, now I'm going to pretend to be the person saying that, and you be you. And role play it back and forth to give them some stock answers to things, to give them some ways of coping and dealing with the situation.
And, you know, we got to teach our kids to be sensitive to other people, you know, to understand that there are other perspectives. They're not necessarily wrong perspectives. They're just different. And so if they can understand the other person, they can communicate with them more effectively. They can avoid offense. They can avoid causing trouble for themselves.
I felt very awkward in social situations until I learned to look for the other people who were feeling awkward and try to make them feel comfortable. And when I took my eyes off myself and put them on ministry, everything changed. I stopped feeling shy and anxious. And I was able to make them feel comfortable, and that gave me an increased social ability.
Okay. We want to give them the emotional support they need. You know, because oftentimes the kids that are in their brains so much of the time, they have trouble with their emotions. They have trouble with controlling the emotions that bubble up. And you just don't understand how important this is. This is the most exciting, most incredible, crucially critical thing that I have ever read in my entire life, and I've got to share it with you, or else you're not going to understand any of it, and it's going to be terrible if you don't understand this as well as I do.
But we've got to leave. I've got things to do.
But I need to explain this to you. You know, they'll get very passionate about things. They get, oh man, this is just the most, and you know, that's a wonderful thing when you see that. That delight in learning about the world that the Lord has put out there and making connections with things and wanting to share it with people, that passion is a wonderful thing, but it can also be a tough thing to manage.
And so some of them, in an effort to manage it, go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And they become Mr. Spock. And they determine not to show any emotion. I'm above all that. There's no emotion here. I'm completely logical.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see they can become passionate or they can become dispassionate. Mm-hmm. Not reacting with emotion at all, and both of them are a problem. Both of them create difficulty in social situations and can create difficulty in your relationship with them. And so,
another thing that they have problems with, and this is documented throughout history, is oftentimes people who have tremendous gifts tend toward depression. You know, they said Winston Churchill dealt with depression, Charles Spurgeon dealt with depression, Martin Luther dealt with depression. You know, you think, you're gifted. You ought to be on cloud nine. Everything's easy for you, right? Well, no, it's not.
No, often they can see better the bad things that can happen, and they focus on those. And a recent study looked at members of Mensa, which is an organization for people in the top 2% of intelligence, and they found that the people of Mensa were far more likely to struggle with depression, far more likely to struggle with attention disorders, and far more likely to struggle with sensory disorders, too, and autoimmune issues. And they think kind of hyper brain, hyper body may be part of that. And so be aware of that, and be aware that this can be a particular struggle during the preteen years. Like 8 to 14, kids go through it at different ages. Some might go through it at 8, others might not till they're 12 or 13. But you can tell when the hormones are flowing, when their emotions don't make sense anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you say, hey, son, go change your shirt.
Why? What's wrong with this shirt? I like this shirt. This is my favorite shirt. You gave me this shirt for Christmas. Okay, there's a spot. If I leave my name tag there, nobody will see the spot. And I don't know, you're always criticizing me. I don't like this anymore. I don't think you like me much anymore. You don't like me as much as my brother. And I'm getting really tired of this. I'm getting really, totally, utterly fed up. Why do you want me to change my shirt? This is a great shirt. What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with him? You know, when the emotions go crazy, when they get angry for no reason, they cry for no reason, you're entering the hormone years. And they can have up to 50 times the testosterone or estrogen they will as adults. Mm-hmm. Let that sink in a minute. It's a wonder they're not axe murderers, people.
Mm. Okay.
You know? How do you deal with this? How do you respond to a meltdown like that? I'll tell you what's tempting to do. You're grounded.
I don't care. I didn't want to come anyway.
Well, you're not going to that event this weekend you wanted to go to.
That's a bunch of dumb people there. I don't have any friends there. I'm glad to stay home.
Well, I'm taking away your iPad.
Well, you said I get too much screen time anyway. That was going to happen.
Well, you're grounded for a month.
Well, I don't care. Make it 2 months. I'll just live here as a hermit. That's fine. You just feed me occasionally. That's all. I don't care.
Yeah, they're irrational. Instead, the way you deal with the meltdown is you have to be the rock. You have to be the calmness in their storm. Mm-hmm. Whoa, hang on, son. Let's sit down and talk about this. Something's going on here, and I love you, and I want to understand. Mm-hmm. See, Satan's saying, nobody loves me, nobody understands. Mm-hmm. And so you sit down and you listen. And you listen until they talk themselves out of the tree.
Okay, and then when you've listened to them and find out what's really on their heart, then you can respond appropriately. Sometimes you just need to explain the situation. Sometimes you do need to discipline them. Sometimes you need to apologize and ask their forgiveness, okay? You just don't know until you've heard what's erupting out of that confused little heart.
And you need to invest in the relationship, and that means you need to listen to what they're saying and respond. Every time they give you a little bid for attention, turn toward them and listen to them and respond to them. Invest in your relationship with them. It will pay off big time, especially as they move into the teen years.
Okay. You know, helping them to develop diligence and good habits is a tough thing, but it's a very important thing.
Yeah, that boredom and distraction leads to sorry work, right?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things too, and I think Isaac Asimov called it the threshold. He said that there seems to be a point in many people's lives where things will come easy, they'll be easy, school will be a breeze, they'll be at the top of the class until they reach a certain point. And it may be when you first encounter algebra. It may be when you try to get into college composition and are actually straining your English abilities. It may be when you get into senior level engineering courses, but at some point, you're going to have to buckle down and work like everybody else. Well, that's something we need to train our gifted kids so that when that happens, they'll say, oh, okay, I know what to do next.
One thing that you can do in your homeschool is you can eliminate busy work. You know, honestly, if they learned it the first time they did 10 problems, don't make them do 10 more problems. Mm-hmm. You know, you can move on and keep moving. Mm-hmm. And reward it when they do concentrate. You know, give them a treat. Give them a privilege. You know, reward it when they do concentrate. You can keep their minds busy, too. Helps. You can encourage them to work faster. We have a thing where, you know, if you beat your previous time doing a math lesson, you get a treat. Now, it can be something really minor. They don't care. It's the winning that they want to do.
You know, sometimes we can do things like you can let your kids study to music. You can just turn on some good classical music, something without words, okay? That's a good thing. But add some music to it because that'll occupy some of that free brain energy so they can concentrate in other areas.
Sometimes if they're having to do rote work, listening to audiobooks can help. I will confess that when I'm doing taxes mm-hmm. or editing or something that doesn't require my whole brain, I watch Netflix while I do it because I have to have a certain amount of sensory stimulation of mental stimulation, or I wander off. And I know that about myself, that I have to have enough mental stimulation to be able to focus.
Now, one thing you can do with your gifted kids, if they do have the ability to finish the schoolwork before they necessarily would have to, then you give them opportunities to do other stuff. You use that extra time. You can do things to say, okay, let's try something that you've never tried before. Let's go outside your comfort zone. Ooh, that's a scary place.
Yeah, let's experiment with some of those areas that you aren't comfortable in. Let's give them an opportunity to fail when they're young mm-hmm. and encourage them that the response to failure is to get up and try again, not to quit and give up. Mm-hmm. And encourage them to appreciate and praise the achievements outside of their comfort zone. Like, help them to recognize the gifts in their siblings and the gifts in their parents and their grandparents and their friends, because, you know...
Well, this is one of those, okay, this is where your self-identity can play tricks with you. Because if you're a child who, let's say, you're technically gifted, you're a math whiz, you're a prodigy in anything that has to do with numbers, it's very easy for somebody to say, I am brilliant because of my numbers, because of my number skills, and all this other artwork and English language and stuff like that. That's not the real world.
It's a waste
the real
of
world,
time.
The real world is the technology and the science and the STEM material.
Yeah. And on the other hand, give grace to the child, to the intellectual child who might struggle with the physical task. Mm-hmm. But be fair. Recognize they may not be developmentally ready for the challenge. Make sure they're developmentally ready.
I mean, let's think about it. You've got a four-year-old who seems to have some gifts in an athletic ability, right? You wouldn't expect your four-year-old to slam dunk a basketball, right? You got to let them grow into it, okay? So same thing with all of their intellectual gifts. You got to let them grow into some of those things.
One of the things they need the most is to be treated like a person and like a child and not a package of gifts. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you see? What do you see? Answer. How about a person holding a glass of water? It's really easy to look at the gift and miss the person and miss the needs of the person. Sonia Schaefer did that in a session I was in, and it really blew my mind because it's so easy to look at the gift or the problem and not see the individual, the needy, the five-year-old who needs a mommy hug even if they're a genius. You know, or the 13-year-old girl who's a genius but is still worried about her complexion, about her figure, because she's a normal girl.
You know, our kids are people. They're people, too. They're not just a gift. They're not just a phenomenon. They are real people who, maybe they've got some gifts that come along with their whole personhood.
They need love and discipline and attention and liberty mm-hmm. to be themselves. We need to teach our kids about true self-worth because it's a little scary what the Word of God says about intellectual stuff. Where's the wise? Where's the scribe? Where's the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world?
1 Corinthians 1:20 and 1 Corinthians 4:7, he says, what do you have that you didn't receive? Okay? You didn't invent your intelligence. God gave you that intelligence, all right?
In professing to be wise, they became fools, Romans 1:22. Mm-hmm. It's not enough to be smart. You know, instead, the Word of God tells us, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, nor the mighty man glory in his might, nor the rich man glory in his riches.
But let him who glories glory in this, that he understands and knows me.
That I am the Lord, exercising loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth, for in these I delight, said the Lord. Jeremiah 9:23.
Now, that's not to say, is wisdom important? Wisdom is a gift.
Yes.
Is strength, might? Yeah.
Yes.
The courage? Great. Riches? That's a gift of God too. But what is the most important thing? The knowledge of the Holy One.
And that's why discipleship is probably the thing these kids need most. Hmm. Ultimately, the most important thing is our kids' souls.
Yeah. And recognize this. In the school system, most of the gifted programs are very intentionally atheistic, humanistic. They are very, very much focused on the self rather than the service, rather than the gift.
We were actually told mm-hmm. not to worry about laws and rules and morality because we were going to be the ones that were going to design that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, that's scary.
But then look at Proverbs chapter 9. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding.
Address their spiritual doubts. Assume they have them. Mm-hmm. Gifted kids are out there wondering, how do we know there's a God? How do we know that Christianity is true? Answer those doubts. Get books, Mere Christianity, The Case for Christ. Study those things with them.
And recognize, if they ask questions, that's not saying, I'm trying to break free from all of your strictures, Mom and Dad. Sometimes they're saying, give me a reason to believe. I want to believe. Help my unbelief.
Welcome their questions. Bring it up if they don't. The one of the huge advantages of homeschooling is it gives you time to disciple your kids. Mm-hmm. And we want to encourage you to take heart that you are the right one to teach your gifted child.
We consider that children are a gift of the Lord and the fruit of the womb is a reward. You know, God chose you to be the parent of that child. I mean, that child with all of their gifts, with all of their struggles, with all of the burdens that may have come with that child, God put that child into your home for you to be the parent. He will equip you.
He will give you what you need, and nobody cares more about that child than you do. You are the right one. You're the one that's gifted. You're the one that's equipped for it. Okay. We'd like to invite you to visit our booth. It's right across the hall there. This is our book, Raising Real Men. We're everywhere on social media / Raising Real Men. Come visit us. Okay. We have a new book for parents of preteens called No Longer Little, Parenting Tweens with Grace and Hope. Okay. And it talks about some of the things we talked about preteens today, and it'll give you some direction and help. Mm-hmm. We also have a new book that isn't even available in hard copy yet, but we have downloadable versions out there. Mm-hmm. It will help you to get accommodations on the SAT and ACT, applying to college and getting accommodations at college. Mm-hmm. Now, we also carry Diane Craft's materials and other materials for struggling learners. We've had a bunch of struggling learners ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we have classic audiobooks which build character. And so encourage you to take a look at those. Mm-hmm. Tell about the podcast.
Okay. We also have a weekly podcast called Making Biblical Family Life Practical. I mean, that's what it is. We're helping people to apply the truth of scriptures in the 21st century family environment. So that's out on the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You can also find us on iTunes. You can find us on iHeartRadio on the podcast tab. So, yeah, join us there, Making Biblical Family Life Practical. Look for our names, HalandMelanie.com/radio is another link you can follow to get there.
And may God give you wisdom and grace and hope in educating those gifted kids. Thank you.